well, you know, I don't dance, I boogie. And then it turned into, you know, turning around the corner and having a song turn on, and I would just find the, you know, let the music take control and see what happens.
Mikko Koivu has officially retired. So should his number be retired too? We've got that plus NHL COVID updates, and Jeff Bedu of the Minnesota Wild and Minnesota Hockey joins us to talk about his new role in creating more equality in the sport we all love. All this coming your way in episode 60.
Pay homage to the Met Center, Metrodome, Fogarty, or your favorite former Viking. What's up, Randy Moss Mooning? With any of Soda 6 Classics throwback tees. Looking to sip on a different flavor? Check out the McGolden Light Pond Hockey and Fishing Club merch line for that extra Minnesota flavor. Toss down that Bardome Beauties code at checkout for free shipping on all purchases at sodastick.com. Hello, everybody. We're back. Episode 60, 6-0. I don't know why. I get so excited about episodes that are nice, like even round even. Out numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, that 60 just sounds good. We're that much closer to 100, which gets me pretty
I thought you were going to say 69, which I was like, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Nice.
That's the
nice. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. That fits. That fits the grand scheme.
We should celebrate that like it's like a 100th episode and just go like
I think Zach
out.
Helgerson needs to obviously be our episode 69
Zach,
guest,
if you're
right?
Listening, please.
Yeah.
That only makes sense. Yeah.
It only makes sense. We're going to do it. It's done. It's a sealed deal. Zach, you're in on episode 69. Appreciate your willingness and agreeing to that. We got some hockey to talk, not a lot because we did do some one-offs this week. Be sure to subscribe and check out our YouTube channel for all of that. We discussed Mikko Koivu, who obviously announced his retirement earlier last week. Congrats to him on a great career. The one thing we didn't touch on, Alexis, in that exclusive was the retirement of his number, which is so duh. We should have talked about it, right? But we didn't. I mean, do you think that the Wild are going to retire Mikko's number? And when do you think that might happen? Do you think it makes sense? What are your initial thoughts on number 9 going to the rafters at the X?
Are the Wild going to do it? I don't know. Should they do it? 100%. I have been pretty adamant on that since he announced that he was going to the Blue Jackets. Like when he signed with them, I was like, okay, he's not on the Wild anymore, but y'all better retire his number. And then when he announced his retirement, I was adamant again that he should have his number retired. I know people are very split on this. At least the Minnesota hockey community is very split on whether he's deserving of having his number retired or not. The Wild have never retired a number before. Granted, they're only
number one.
Well, number one. Yeah. Never forget the fans. a very important retirement. But they've never retired a player's number before. So you are in a way setting the standard for like, okay, if they retire Mikko's number, that's your basis then. Like you did that. So then anything above that needs to be retired and yada, yada, yada. So I know a lot of people's discussion over it is that this is then setting the standard and is he worthy of being the first retirement and setting that standard. I just think yes, because I just think that everything that he did for this organization, his stats among the organization, I think speak for themselves. His leadership among the organization speaks for itself. And I really think that you could see his value on this team in the time that he was with them and in the short time that he was gone. You could see what he did for this team. So I think he's worthy of it. And I am trying so hard to say that as an unbiased view of just thinking, you know, as a hockey person, does this make sense? Because yes, I loved him as a player, respected him as a human being. And I was sad to see him go, but I really think that he deserves to have his number retired. And I stand by that. What do you feel about it, Jesse?
I'll play the skeptic, because as a hockey person, you look at teams across the league and the numbers that they retire and the players that are attached to those numbers, it's Hall of Famers. It's folks that are going to be enshrined in hockey forever, right? I mean, it's not something willy-nilly that you just toss up there. I don't see Mikko Koivu as a Hall of Famer, you know, so that right there negates kind of that traditional aspect of a jersey retirement. Does he mean so much to this organization? Absolutely, 100%. And, you know, you look at him and you think Minnesota Wild automatically. For that reason, because it's a very Minnesota thing to do, I think absolutely they're going to retire it because that's what they do. Again, you have the number one hanging for the fans. It's, you know, no
I'm
discredit
tired of
to
roasted for that. We
I
need
know.
Another
I mean,
jersey
no discredit to the organization by any means, but that's kind of that's just who they are. And so they are going to kind of do things on their own path, right? And Minnesota likes to toot their own horn in their own way accordingly. So I think for that reason, Miko's number gets retired. But again, I'm a little skeptical because I don't think he would be a player on any other team or in any other organization, even if he had the longevity. If he was in Boston, even if he had played his entire career there like he did Minnesota, they're not hanging his number, right? No. And again, that's an original 16. But you look at other squads around the league that maybe are similar to the Wild in the respect mm-hmm. that they have aren't an original six. And there's a lot of things that you have to check off in order to have your jersey retired. And as much as I think that should remain the same across the board, I think Minnesota will say, nope, he checks the box that we want. And that's the loyalty. And that's that. So I think you'll probably see it at some point in time. I look forward to when Miko makes his return to Minnesota and they can honor him accordingly, because I think he 100% deserves that. But at the end of the day, it'll get retired. I just think maybe it shouldn't. I think, okay. I don't know who.
So you
would
and I
do
are
that.
Like on exact opposite pages. I'm like, I don't know if they will, but I think they should. And you're like, they definitely think... will, but I don't know if they should.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's again, no fair. Disrespect to Miko or to the organization. I just think in general, I'm very like, Hall of Famers. That's who gets, I mean, Willie O'Ree is finally getting his jersey retired in Boston. And that
should have happened
something.
A long time ago,
exactly.
But yeah,
so it's
funny when you said Boston as an example, I was like, yeah, he's no Willie O'Ree. That's for sure. But
every
organization has their own rules to it, right? You get to do what you want. So again,
Nashville loves to hang banners for everything they do. So whatever, you know,
why not? Yeah. You're setting the tone, whether you do it or you don't. So we'll see what the Wild decide to do.
Exactly. For more of our thoughts on Miko's retirement and his career here in Minnesota and his brief stint in Columbus, feel free to go check out our YouTube page again. Similarly, we discussed this on our YouTube page. In a one-off, obviously the COVID ravaging the NHL, ravaging the Minnesota Wild. They have been on pause since February 2nd when they were in Colorado. They got one game out of that two-game series. We talked the length about the Wild being shut down, right? And they are expected, according to Bill Guerin, we're recording this on Friday, according to him today, they are expecting to go to LA and play their series with the Kings starting on Tuesday of this week. So that's promising. You know, I think it's kind of as some of the players, we talked to Marcus Foligno, who jokes that he feels bad that he's the one that maybe brought it in. And Matt Dumba even brought up, you know, he is glad the team's going through this now as opposed to later because it's become the norm. Alexis, do you think, I mean, every team's going to go through this, right? At this point, do you expect fully that every single team is going to have this hit? I mean, now we've missed more than 30 games have been postponed and rescheduled.
I think we're close to 40 at this point.
Exactly. I mean, do you see this just kind of, like Dumba said, it's the norm and it's to be expected that every team in the league will deal with this at some point?
I think it's highly unlikely that any team gets out of it completely unscathed, right? Even on some small level, I think every team will be touched, whether that's a player, a staff, something, or where players have to quarantine, even if they didn't get it. It is going to hit every team in some kind of way, and some definitely worse than others. But to Matt Dumba's point, and I think I said this in the last episode, but I agree, I'd rather have it happen early on. See how, you know, how quickly that you can get through it, what you can do to keep the players safe in the meantime, and then what you can do moving forward. On a purely hockey level, you wouldn't want this to happen come playoff time, right? Purely hockey level, you don't want this to happen in the middle of the season where you're fighting for points. You'd rather get this over with towards the beginning of the season, where you can be done with it and move forward through the rest of the season. Even if your games are postponed because other teams have it, at least your team internally is not dealing with it. Right. And it is a tough thing to go through, and it's tough to see the names get added to that list. And you just hope and pray that they're okay, and that whether they have it or they're just quarantining, whatever the circumstance is, that they're safe and that they get through it safely. But yeah, I agree with Matt Dumba 100% that you get it over with now. The Wild got hit pretty hard with it. And you just hope that they will come out of it okay and be able to move on with the rest of their season.
And in respect to Dumba, it gave him the time that he needed to heal. He was obviously injured. Luckily, he expects to be back in the lineup come Tuesday against Minnesota. Matt Zuccarello, possible to make his season debut against the LA Kings with the Minnesota Wild on Tuesday as well. So, I mean, also you look at that aspect of it. Jared Spurgeon's on the COVID list. He's still hurt, still week to week with him. Not sure what's going on there. And no real update on Alex Stalock either. But you look at the situations of the Marco Rossi's, right? And you don't want it to be something that ends up being so detrimental to a player's career. So again, that's where I go back and forth, because again, I'll say I'm selfish and I love having hockey back for my own personal sake, but is it right? I don't know. I mean, I think it's not fair to say, yeah, every team's going to go through this. It's fine, because every person reacts to it differently. And while one player might be asymptomatic, another one might not. And, you know, Marcus said for him, it felt like the flu, but again, it hits everybody differently. And as athletes too, you don't want to take away their livelihood by putting them at risk of something that could do exactly that. So I mean,
just because these are people who are in the peak shape of their life, it doesn't mean that it's not going to affect them either short-term or long-term. Right. I will say this though, that I think that a lot of people are very nervous and maybe angry that certain sports are happening right now, as you know, to the point of like, well, why do we need them? Can't they just stop? I think people forget that these people could, these athletes could get this on their own time. Even if there's no hockey, they could go to a restaurant and get it. They could go see their friend and get it. I mean, just because you stop a sport from happening doesn't mean you're 100% keeping these people safe. They might go about their lives a certain way then that then causes them to get it that way. So I am kind of in the same boat of you, as where I'm selfish with it, where I'm like, God, I just want to watch sports so bad. And you know, they might get this anyway, they might go through something similar anyway, but the other part of me is wondering, you know, well, is there a safer way to do this?
Well, you have to also remember the financial aspect.
Yeah.
The NHL is not flush with cash like the NFL.
Nope.
You know, so they have to figure out something to bring some cash in, because if right now they're only getting TV revenue, they're not getting any gate. And then if all of a sudden you take away both, they're out for a full year. There could be franchises that would be closing.
Yeah.
And so yes, 100% life is the most important thing, but is there an appropriate line where risks could be taken to make sure that things don't collapse?
Right. And the NHL obviously releasing stricter protocols, and Minnesota Wild in particular, because they've had the outbreak, are now even adhering to even stricter than other teams across the league. I mean, really, they're creating the tightest little bubbles they can. Players are having to stay at home and you can't do anything. And family members then impede, which again is where I get a little skeptical. Like, that sucks. If I'm married to my husband's an NHLer and I have to stay home the whole time with the kids and do this
for
and
months.
Can't go anywhere. Yeah. Like, it's impeding on, you know, every day. And again, we're all feeling this in the normal world too. Right. Certainly I'm not out there gallivanting around by any means, but just, you know, it challenges those things. And, you know, I'm intrigued to see what other changes are being made, and teams are wanting to get back. I think it was Arizona that announced they will have fans in the stands now too, which again, it sounds so crazy, because here you are dealing with games postponed and teams quarantining, and other teams are able to let fans in. And it feels like
two different worlds sometimes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, last night I was watching hockey on TV, and it's like, earlier that day I had been thinking about how weird it was that there's been no Wild hockey for like a week, and there's other games going on, and I sit down after work and there's seven games I can pick from to watch. And I'm like, it just feels like two different worlds sometimes. And
I know,
I mean, I applaud the NHL for adjusting quickly and trying to make new protocols to keep them safe after they've seen, you know, what has happened. And I think that's the best you can do. To Fred's point, they have to find ways to keep the business going, to make money, to, you know, keep the league going. And they are adjusting on the fly. They're trying to take results and take these changes as best they can, and make changes when necessary. And that's really all, you know, they're no different than a small business. They're no different than a restaurant or anything. They're doing the best they can and adjusting when they can. And that's what they're doing. So
exactly. One thing that I don't like about some NHL teams right now, the Vegas Golden Knights and their gold helmets.
Guys,
I saw Notre Dame do this years ago, and
they looked better with Notre Dame.
They looked better with Notre Dame. I think it was because of the white jersey, and I'm not sure. It looked horrendous. And usually I'm all for like trying things and having some fun, and that does suit Vegas, right? But I'm just eek. If you guys did not see them, and I tweeted out a picture, I think
don't go
everybody
look at them
did.
Now if you avoided it for this long, just keep on moving with your life is what I would say.
The biggest question I have about it, Alexis, do you think which is worse, the Dallas Neon
or
the
really
Vegas
gonna make
gold
me pick
helmets?
Okay, the Dallas Neon jerseys is worse for sure, but the Vegas Golden Knight gold helmets were atrocious. They were so bad. And
did you see Ryan Reeves wearing it? Like, he looked so ridiculous. Can you imagine? He probably looked in the mirror and he's like, what the f-? I'm sure that's all he said. Like, he looked so ridiculous because his hair kind of popped out, and he looked like a Tron of some sort. He looked hilarious.
The sad thing is I think Vegas has really cool jerseys, right? Like, I think they're one of the more unique color schemes and just like logos. And I really like their
Fred
jerseys.
Loves
and
the black and gold.
Yes, I love the bits of gold on their jerseys. Like, I think they're super cool. The gold helmets absolutely have to go. They have to go.
First off, don't just loop me into like loving everything.
Don't you love second black off, and gold?
I love black and old gold, which are the colors for my alma mater, University of Missouri. It's an old gold.
Just go back. I'm mute.
Not just all like right, okay. gold, anyway. gold, bright gold.
I went to Mizzou. I'm really special.
Super special.
I just, the gold helmets, 100% no for me. And I even like, I quote tweeted your tweet, Jesse, and I saw someone responded. They were like, something about how other teams have done this before.
So I'm many like, people missed it, apparently. I was laughing. I'm like, nobody saw this? Like, do we forget it? I mean, of course, I was just trying to watch any hockey that I could, like you had said earlier, but yeah.
I think the funniest shots were like the pictures of the players on the bench and it's just like gold helmet lined up next to gold helmet. I'm like, this is the worst look I've ever seen. Like,
not great.
I haven't been this worked up since the Stars released their neon jerseys, but I'm like, if I have to see these helmets again, I'm literally just going to watch a different game. That's the end of that story. Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just not good. Not good. Moving
it's been a while
on
since from... I got mad about something on the podcast. Wow. Alexis
that's
ranting
why I had
again.
To include it in. Back. I was like, we got to talk about this. There is something seriously wrong here. Before we take a break, I do want to give a shout out to USA Hockey, who kicks off their Hockey Week across America. Special events all week long celebrating USA Hockey and the game here in America. So we certainly love to see that. Try Hockey for Free also happening this coming Saturday. Be sure to take your kids out if you've got a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, someone who certainly has never played hockey. It's a great time to get them out and try it for free. Imagine that. So shout out to them. Jeff Baidu, our guest, will be talking a little bit more about how we can make outreach happen more in the hockey community and make hockey for everyone. So we'll be back with him after this short break.
Hey guys, it's producer Fred. Gentlemen, I want to take a moment and talk about your hedges, about your rough, your fairway, your greens, your front lawn and backyard. Is it manicured enough to improve your overall curb appeal? Well, we want to introduce you to our new partner, Manscaped. Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created. They just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof for shower trimming, a premium battery and charging station. Manscaped has you and your sensitive areas covered. Get 20% off and free shipping when you use code BUTES at checkout. That's 20% off and free shipping when you use code BEAUTS, that's BEAUTS, at checkout.
We're back. Joining us now, originator and star of the Baidu Boogie, member of the Minnesota Wild Fan Relations Team, and new equity advisor with Minnesota Hockey, Mr. Jeff Baidu. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing very well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I am loving the hat, loving the hoodie. Tell us a little bit about what you're rocking as far as for our YouTube viewers, your look right now.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I'm in some Fanatics gear from the NHL. The We Skate for Equality hashtag came out while they were in the bubble, just to kind of shed some light on two social justice issues, which I'm really happy the league jumped on board with. I own a few of these sweatshirts with a few different team logos on them, but wear the NHL one proudly. And then my hat is from Hybrid Nation, which is a company that Jeremy Sutherland, brother of Justin Sutherland, who you might know from Iron Chef and Top Chef, started, and really, really unique company with some great clothing that kind of just helps spread a unique message. And this hat says, "In diversity, we trust." I've got quite a bit of gear from them as well that displays just staying hybrid, staying, unique to unity and equity and inclusion and all of the above. So happy to sport it. And for quality when I can.
Exactly right. Hockey is for everyone. You and I have talked at length about this. You're now Minnesota Hockey's equity advisor, and you see finally a youth association putting their foot forward, right? And making sure diversity and inclusion in hockey truly is for everyone. You had a great quote to me saying that it's more than just a hashtag. And we just see hockey is for everyone hashtag, and it's kind of thrown out there willy nilly. But from your perspective, what have you seen from USA Hockey, Minnesota Hockey, and now the NHL, as far as really making it more than a hashtag and making it truly for everyone the best that they can and putting that step forward?
Yeah. And it, you know, the sport of hockey has a unique place in my heart. You know, my parents are both from West Africa, from Ghana. And so when they moved to Alberta, they assimilated to the Canadian culture with the sport of hockey. And so I look at some of the friendships and lifelong things that they've experienced in their lives, having moved from Ghana to Edmonton. My brother and I were born in Edmonton during the 80s, right? So an interesting time to be a sports fan in the City of Champions in Edmonton there. So it's more than a sport. It's bigger than that. And it's really cool that Hockey is for Everyone kind of displays that. It really embodies that the sport is for everyone. It doesn't matter, you know, your background of any kind, you're welcome to enjoy the sport, play the sport, and be a part of something bigger than yourself, which is ultimately the goal.
How do you feel as someone who, you know, you talked about, you know, assimilating to that hockey culture, not having it, your parents assimilating to it and kind of growing up in that, how do you use your background and your family's culture to your advantage now that you're in the role that you're in? And, you know, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, thanks. It's a, you know, fun way to explore the sport and kind of my history and you know, how my parents, like I said, assimilated to the Canadian culture through it. You know, a lot of my friends growing up, we were all first generation Canadians, and all our parents were all from different parts of the world. So any household we went into, it was immediately you were immersed in another culture. But one thing you could bond over and have a similarity with was cheering for the Oilers or cheering for the Jets or whatever Canadian team was on a hockey night in Canada on Saturday night. You know, everyone was doing the same thing, and you always knew exactly where your friends were at that time. And when you saw that goal or that deke or that celly or what have you, because you were together watching the sport of hockey. So it's definitely something that I've grown up with and really embodied. And it's cool to now have a chance to kind of spread that word and do the same thing with the sport, especially here in the state of hockey.
Well, right. It's like Canada. We love to tell people that, right? Like, hey, we're just like Canada. But it is. You had mentioned it helped your parents assimilate to the Canadian culture. And it is that bond that ties us together, right? Like, we're so proud of it. And I mean, why is that important for folks coming in and to feel welcome, right? I mean, that's more than ever why you want everyone to feel included, because it's so ingrained, especially here in Minnesota and in Canada. And as the sport grows, I mean, is that really why we need to do a better job at opening our arms to folks from everywhere?
Yeah, it's truly one of those things where, you know, you say you cut somebody, everybody bleeds red, right? It's the same thing. My parents, if they were watching a game and, you know, it's a tight playoff game against the Islanders back in the 80s and they lost, I think they said they'd go nights without eating or sleeping, right? Like every other fan. So they were doing those same things where it was so important to be on the same side as a team and to cheer for something unique and together. And it brought a whole community together in Edmonton. And I kind of, like I said, grew up in that and witnessed it happening. And so to have an opportunity to do that here in the state of hockey, where, again, it's like Canada South, like you mentioned, it's very, I mean, the temperature, I think sometimes is colder here in Minnesota than north of the border. So
truly, that's almost, again, Minnesotans will
this week especially. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, we recorded episode 60 at the right time, I think. So yeah, definitely something that, you know, folks have been doing for years when it comes to sports. It's something that brings people together and collectively, right? If you're cheering for a team, you're going all out for that team. And I think that's something we can do as a sport. You know, if you're cheering for the sport to grow and be the best sport possible, you're cheering for the sport to have the best people in it. And I'm biased. I already think that exists, but there's room for more. And I'm excited to be a part of that growth.
I always love asking people who grew up as hockey fans who now work in hockey or just in sports in general, how do you use that passion to your advantage in your career now? I think that's one of the best parts about working in sports is also being a sports fan. What does that feel like for you? How do you use that passion to fuel you throughout your career?
What's unique is I'm an account executive in the front office with the Minnesota Wild. So I'm you know, living out the dream as a kid who got to make it to the NHL in some capacity. I don't get to lace up the skates, but I get a chance every day to connect with season ticket members and hear their passion. So my passion, you know, seeps through the phone, especially now that we're not able to see them in person. Mm-hmm. And in whatever capacity we're able to connect with them, I make sure to exude that so that they know I'm a passionate hockey fan, just like they are, when it comes to our team and to just the sport as a whole. And I think that's something that you'll see quite a bit in the hockey community is that everyone kind of understands it. Everyone's been through something like it. You know, everyone's been through an overtime loss and an overtime win, right? So it's one of those things where, again, it's a part of the community that just brings you together and closer. And in being an account executive, I've done more for the organization too. I don't just limit myself to my passion being, you know, in the scope of my My career opportunity and other duties as assigned has kind of gone off the rails, which is great. I love it. But I've had a chance now to work really closely with our community relations department. Obviously finding this equity advisor role with Minnesota Hockey has helped with that. I've gotten a chance to form a few new partnerships for youth hockey development with New Directions Youth Ministry in North Minneapolis, for example. Next week, we'll be helping put up a rink, a portable rink right in North Minneapolis in North Commons Park for kids to skate on. And we were running into obstacles like water source, for example. And now we've got the Minneapolis Black Firefighters Association there to help flood the rink because a few of their members actually used to skate at Powderhorn Park when there was a rink there, right? So it's so unique to see how much the sport has been a part of people's lives, even though you wouldn't necessarily think of it. And what it gets a chance to do is just bring the community together. And the hockey community already exists here in Minnesota, which is brilliant. And we've got, like I said, the temperature and the capacity to put more rinks up. And so that's exactly what I feel like I'm doing, is by sharing that passion with folks, they get a chance to see a kid who loves the sport, but also now I've identified myself as a guy who works in the front office. He doesn't actually have to lace the skates up, but somebody in this community could look up to and find as someone who now they could be an executive as well. So there's definitely unique things that have grown from it. And I'm really excited to just keep those going.
I mean, if you can see it, you can be it. We've said that I don't know how many times with our various guests, right? And you're exactly right. How did you find yourself in this role with the Minnesota Wild? What was your trajectory? What was your path there? And what led you here? I know you were bouncing around Canada for a little bit, and then you kept with the cold climate to the southern border here.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So right out of school, so I graduated from Waseca High School in southern Minnesota, after having lived in Edmonton and Winnipeg, through my youth years. And then we moved to Minnesota. My dad's a professor for the University of Minnesota, which is what brought us here. And so, graduating in a small town like Waseca and then coming up to the big Twin Cities at the U and getting a chance to see all the sports teams and everything like that. Obviously my passion for hockey's never left, but I graduated with an HR and communications degree at the University of Minnesota. I went on to work at an online institution in downtown Minneapolis on the advising team, where I was advising undergrad, master's, and PhD students, which was, again, an incredible experience, but wasn't quite the same after having gone to a school like the U to work for an online school. So the Wild actually hosted a couple of networking opportunities. I remember very distinctly they were against the Flames. And
was it through Teamwork Online?
It was indeed,
always.
Yes.
Yes, I'm sure we bumped into each other there. I was constantly at those events.
You may have been, yeah. So they had hosted a few right in the front office. And I remember just walking in and seeing the logo on the door and thinking to myself, like, this is a really cool experience that I'd like to repeat over and over again. And no job opportunities were available when I first made my way out to the networking events. But I suppose I made myself memorable the right way and received a few calls later on to join the team on the new business development side. And I haven't looked back since. I'm now entering my 7th season, and 5 of the last 7 have been with the customer service and retention team as an account executive. So, again, there's been other things that have popped up as a result of just being in this sports world and with the Wild and in hockey. But like I said, as a Canadian kid, your dream is to play in the NHL. And if you can't play in the NHL, make it to the NHL in some capacity. And so I've gotten a chance to do that.
Well, before you ended up working in hockey and in the NHL, you said how you were a huge fan. So who was your idol? Who did you want to be when you grew up? If you had the chance to lace up the skates, who were you trying to skate like?
And there are worse teams than the Edmonton Oilers to follow at that
right.
time.
Yeah,
that
you had some good role models
to them, right?
Right. Yeah, I'd say, well, the first player I got a chance to see that looked like me and was also in the community was Grant Fuhr. Had no desire to play goalie. My brother and I were soccer players also in our life to grow up, and goaltender was never anything we'd be strong at. Admire them and their courage, but definitely something I couldn't pull off. So later on also in Alberta, it was challenging to admire him with a Flame sweater on, but Jerome McGinley was also a very huge part of being a role model and just a person in the sport who embodied everything. He could score goals, mm-hmm. He could also fight, and he could do everything, right? So it was one of those things where you looked up to him as somebody who was just exciting to watch, but also looked like me and could play the sport at a very high level. So there was a couple unique things in Alberta alone, of course, but throughout the sport, Edmonton also ended up being a team that at one point in time had 5 Black players on the ice.
Yeah.
And so that was a really cool thing to be able to witness as an Oilers fan. to think about one day being a part of that line or being a part of that organization. So to be in the NHL in some capacity and help now provide that dream for other kids mm-hmm. is pretty cool.
You would recognize Iggy if you saw him on the side of the road, say in like Boston, right? Did you see that video of the Boston reporter who had no idea they were talking to Jerome McGinley, and they some man in Boston who says it's not that cold, and I was like, Jerome McGinley. Would you recognize him, Jeff?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
you could not, right? I also heard that you have drank from the Isabel Cup. Is that true? How did that come about, and how exciting was that? Looking forward to a Stanley Cup drinking of sorts with the Minnesota Wild maybe sometime down the line?
Absolutely, yeah. I definitely got a chance to take a few sips from the Isabel Cup the night the Whitecaps had won it. We were hosting a game, and they had a suite to themselves, and I actually felt like a celebrity when I walked in. I think it could have been at the height of the Beidou Boogie, and so they chanted Beidou Boogie and drank from the cup. And when I was in the moment, I had no choice but to put it to my lips and have a sip. So, and it continued that night. We actually had a chance to go down to Herbie's and enjoy a few more from it. So it was great. It was an amazing celebration. I've got some colleagues and teammates. You know, we've got a floor hockey league that takes place sometimes. So I feel like I got a chance to be right alongside them throughout the journey. And, you know, unfortunately, we had quite a few conflicts with games, but I was able to get out there and witness a few, and there's nothing like it. So it was awesome to see them right there at Trio Rink doing all the things.
Before we move on, though, you brought the floor hockey, and I have to bring up what you do while you play floor hockey, because I played against this guy 2 seasons at the X. This guy barks at you whenever you get...
I need
ball.
To hear it. I he need to hear it. Right up against please.
You and can just we... barks in your ear and it scares the crap out of you.
Can we get a confirmation on that, Jeff? Please.
I have caused a few turnovers, I think, with a few barks. And
it's his go-to strategy.
Is it an aggressive? Is it like a whoop or is it like a like what kind of bark are we talking here? I need to know.
It's a pretty aggressive one to like I said to put the fear of you to. Hopefully make you give up the ball to me for a little bit to pretend I can stick hell enough to either get a goal or get it to a teammate who can score. So I've definitely, you know, let out a few barks on the court.
Did you learn that from somebody or was that just your tactic growing up playing hockey and you're like, hey, I'm going to move it on to floor hockey now?
It's been something I've always just kind of done just to kind of shock and awe. You don't expect it. And so when you hear it, you might actually think there's a Rottweiler on the court or something next to you. And once the turnover happens, then I'm good. If I'm a plus one, I get off the court. I'm
so it's effective. I absolutely love it. And since you brought it up, another unique aspect to you, the Beidou Boogie. We got to know, how did that start? It took on a life of its own. We got to see some of it at the X even. I mean, tell us a little bit about that. And can we get a sampling on here as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, so the Beidou Boogie was something that had started again through colleagues. You know, it was a work hard, play hard environment, I learned, once you get into the sports world. And so, you know, I feel like we've got one of the best teams in the league when it comes to our customer service and retention team. Again, we work hard. And so the play hard kicks in a little bit too, when we get a chance. And I remember it was kind of just a silly thing. I was walking by someone's desk and I ended up going back and forth a few times. And they asked if I was doing a dance move because I had forgotten actually why I'd gotten up. And so the last time, I think it started off on Snapchat as a 10-second snap. You know, it was like, Jeff, do something cool. And I think I ended up just busting out a move. And then it well, you know, I don't dance, I boogie. And then it turned into, you know, turning around the corner and having a song turn on. And I would just find the, you know, let the music take control and see what happens. So it was always a unique way to, like I said, have our work hard, play hard environment really shine through. And credit to a lot of the, you know, people on our team for putting up with it. We were playing random songs throughout the office, or, you know, dance moves, or you hear giggling on one side of the office, usually something I was involved in. So it was a really good way, just like I said, to break up the monotony of a day, but also get back to work hard and commemorate it. And actually it took on a life of its own. Like you said, a few of the players caught on. I won one of the big proponents right off the bat was Charlie Coyle. He was a huge fan. To this day, Matt Dumba, I still don't know if he knows my name. He calls me Boogie. Dubnik was a huge fan. So, yeah, we've definitely had some players, you know, wish that they could take part. And, yeah, stay tuned. That might be taking place. We never know.
I love it. You listed off a number of buttes, too. So maybe we get all of you guys back on. They show us their best rendition. Charlie, Devin, I know you guys are listening. So hop on. We'll get the Beidou Boogie going, get a whole trend lined up for us. I love it.
Well, we, you know, we've talked here about how much fun it can be to work in sports, and, you know, it is a hard job, and people always think it's so glamorous. There's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes, that make it a very difficult job. But we do have a lot of fun with what we do, and sports are so much fun to watch, to be a part of. But there's also a balance sometimes, especially with what you're doing now with your new role as the equity advisor. That's a serious thing that you're engaging in, and an important thing in the sports and hockey community. How do you find that balance of realizing the value of what you're doing and taking that seriously and working hard towards that, but also having fun with this career, because it truly is such a fun career to be in?
Yeah, I think that's a credit to the leadership. I think we've been blessed with some of the best leaders in the game, in the fan relations department, Maria Troji, Erica McKenzie. Without the guidance and leadership from those two, I don't think it'd be possible to enjoy the job as much or enjoy the work, and then also learn as much as we're learning on the go, right? So there's a lot of life lessons that come with working in sports, and a lot of things you'll learn about the business side when, you know, you're on the business side. And there's, you know, I guess a degree, right, to which you'll learn all those things as long as you're interested and passionate about it. And then same thing when it comes to with Minnesota Hockey and the equity advisor role. Glenn Andreessen, Steve Wollheiser, you know, the president of Minnesota Hockey, they've been great. Again, their leadership and guidance is kind of what led to this opportunity presenting itself. And, you know, it's not lost on me that it's the first of its kind, and that there's a lot to come with it. And I've got some unique experiences in my history that I think have prepared me uniquely to be ready for this role and take this on and really make a difference. So it's good that the leadership, like I said, is important to have guide you through making sure you take it seriously, but you have fun doing it, and make sure it's fun for others coming up along the way. But also, yeah, just the way I was raised, you know, my parents have persevered through quite a few things and stayed persistent and themselves through it all. And that's certainly helped too. I think, you know, that leadership and guidance from the home is kind of where a lot of stuff starts. And having the guidance I've got from them has been paramount in putting me in a position to understand what tasks I'm taking on and understand the, you know, the brevity of what's coming next for the future of not just the sport, but for the legacy of a role like this, right? It's not just Jeff, the equity advisor of today. It's hopefully something that doesn't have to exist because there's just equality in everything we're doing moving forward. But yeah, I'd say the leadership has certainly helped put me in a position to understand what's coming next, as well as, like I said, the unique experiences I've had growing up in now two countries, you know, to put it all into perspective and say, hey, I can lend a hand to somebody who's had the experience. And, you know, one thing I've learned from both parents who are teachers is that when you learn stuff like that, there's nothing, anything, no one can ever take that away from you. If you learned it and experienced it to be true in yourself, that's going to last with you forever. So I'm hoping to do the same thing with these roles and the opportunities I've been given on a platform that I didn't know would exist before I had it.
Right. You mentioned two countries. Are you a dual citizen?
Not yet. No, I'm not still a yet? Canadian We're... citizen. Yep. Okay. So a lot of hoops to jump through with the deal. I would think that, you know, as famous as I'm becoming, that they would just grant it. But there's still some paperwork to fill out and some hoops to jump through. But yeah, I plan to become a dual citizen and take full advantage of the benefits of being an American. But yeah, right now, as you know, in the hockey world, there's quite a few of us Canadian, so I don't feel too alone.
Yes.
But the dual citizenship would be unique and pretty awesome to experience as well.
I certainly want you to use your boogie to maybe lure somebody like, I don't know, Connor McDavid from Edmonton or something. If you could do that, that would be really, really helpful, I think, to the Wild fan base. You up for it?
Absolutely.
Love it. Connor, you're listening. I'm sure you are. We'll send that video out to you to bring you to the Minnesota Wild. We certainly could use you, maybe, kind of, some
there
of your skills.
There might be a fight for that number, though. We'll have to see.
That's very true. Before we let you go, I mean, again, I want to bring it back to the equity advisor role with Minnesota Hockey, because I do find that to be so important. It's great to see the NHL get behind it, but you need to start at the grassroots. Everyone knows that you need to start at the bottom, especially when it comes to the kids, and you want the kids to get involved in the game. How can people reach out to you? How can folks here in Minnesota, if their parents or coaches, learn more about your role or learn more about how they can help make sure that hockey truly becomes for everyone?
Absolutely. Yeah. I can be reached at jbaidu@minnesotahockey.org. And that's an email address that was recently created for me in this role so that I could be of assistance. I think there was a time when, you know, those who look like me weren't feeling as empowered to play the sport and enjoy it, just like everyone else who gets a chance to do that, especially here in the great state of hockey, right? So the equity advisor role is definitely something that's popped up to empower kids and families and those who traditionally haven't known that the sport's been there for them to enjoy, and put them in a position to learn how to do so. I think that there's a lot of education coming through this role and in the sports world when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so there's quite a bit to learn. And so, yeah, USA Hockey has done an amazing job. There's a lot of resources that are on the way. They're still coming, but there are still quite a few that are out there now too. Visiting, you know, any website basically that's attached to USA Hockey or Minnesota Hockey, we'll have details on what's to come. But yeah, if you were looking to reach out to me directly, jbaidu@minnesotahockey.org is the best way to get in touch and go from there.
I just have one last question. What does the hockey scene look like as far as equality goes in 5-10 years? What is that vision for you? What are you hoping to see? What kind of changes do you want to be made in that time?
Well, I'm already biased in thinking that we've got the greatest sport in the world. And so what I think comes next in the 5, 10, 20 years down the road is finding the best athletes and putting them in the sport. I mean, if you think about putting, for example, LeBron James on skates and, you know, seeing him go up against, just another geisha, it's just so many different things that I'm expecting for this role to hopefully, like I said, shed light on and create. But I truly think right now we're looking at, you know, not very many African-American, African-Canadian players playing in the league at the highest level. And, you know, in order for our sport to continue to grow and to be the best internationally and worldwide, we'll continue to add diversity to put the best teams forward. So I think what we'll see is a much more, the diversity exists. I think it's the inclusivity. We're going to start including more. I think they'll grow the fan base, right? We'll see a much more colorful scene in the stands, and therefore we'll see a much more colorful scene on the ice eventually down the road as everyone falls in love with the sport, because you have no choice but to when you see it in person. And my goal is to get as many people in front of it as possible.
Heck yeah, we're all on board with that. Yeah, we love growing the game. Certainly, Jeff, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for all that you're doing to help grow the game, be an example for kids and parents and adults alike. We really appreciate it. And for the dance moves, if you have any tips for my dance moves, I'd love to hear them at any point in time.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Calling all beauts, our Bar Down Beauties Teespring line has everything to help make you an official beaut, whether it's waking up with a hot cup of coffee from a Bar Down Beauties mug, rocking our Land of 10,000 Buttes crew neck, or tossing an official logo on your water bottle. We want to make you an official part of our team. So support the beauts with the purchase. Go buy something right now. Love you guys.
We're back. Thanks again to Jeff for joining us. I just love him. I could hang out and just like... boogie with them, right? Maybe we boogie. I've really pushed the boogie thing. I feel maybe too much. I wish I could see more of the boogie, but
I gotta also say he is the king of treating himself. If you follow him on Instagram, he's constantly, well, pre-COVID, was constantly getting pedicures, going to concerts, and
good for him.
He knows how to live a good life.
Good for him.
I love it. I love it. Well, and I love all that he's doing for the sport. He's so active in the community, and he's so passionate about that. And I think that's truly, truly special. I mean, we love growing the game. Again, I don't know how many times we say that each episode, but it's because it's true to our hearts. I mean, I want everybody to embrace the game. And like Jeff said, it's the best game in the world. Get out there, and there's no reason not everybody should feel included. We're going to exclude some people though, however, with our up for debate of this week.
Yep.
We went with decades. So we went just from 2000 to 2010, best Minnesota Wild team of that decade. Not a whole lot of greatness to pick from, Alexis. I mean, in general, let's be honest.
Although I would argue that's where the better teams were compared to the second decade. So I don't know. We did the inaugural season. We did the 2002-2003 epic playoff run season. And then 2007-2008, which is when the Wild won the Northwest Division. Hashtag bring back the Northwest Division. So
always Alexis's new platform. Bring back the Northwest
Division. I need to plug it every episode. I just am waiting. So I would say that those were three pretty good seasons to choose from. And you can kind of go from the aspect of like the roster, like was that when the best players were around or was it the season? I went with 2007, 2008, and granted, in 2001, I was five. 2002, 2003, I don't remember that playoff run. I was still pretty young. So I know 2007, that 07-08 season was one of the first seasons that I remember, like, just being truly so excited about that season. And I remember they beat Calgary to clinch the division. I will never forget that.
How old were you in 2007, 2008? We should probably just,
I was born in 95, so I was like 12.
Like, I was in college in 2008 when I was watching that series.
Like, it's hard for me to think back because I know, like, realistically, like, that 03 playoff run is like the greatest moment in Wild history, but I don't remember it. But I do remember, I remember when they clinched the division and I was so excited, and it was just such a fun, fun season. And, you know, they beat Calgary to clinch it, who I hated Calgary growing up. So that's what I went with, but arguably you could honestly go with any of those three. Which one did you pick, Jesse?
I also went with 2007, 2008, because actually during 2003-04, I was very into college hockey. It took me a while to get into the Wild, frankly. I mean, I'll be completely honest. Gopher hockey was at its prime during that time, and I was just loving college hockey. So certainly I paid attention. I remember my mom and dad, who were season ticket holders, just amped up, so jacked, and I was too, but 2007, 2008, that's where my passion was more alive for sure. Yeah. You know, and I kind of, like you had said, like, I remember watching the series and the playoffs and being so excited about it. So I went with them as well, and I feel bad because no love for the inaugural year, but
Well, yeah, I mean, I was like a fetus, so I can't recall what happened in that year. I mean, I know it was exciting, but
the reason that's probably momentous, obviously, is it's the first year and you finally have professional hockey back, and what are they going to do? And the X at that time, best building in the league, still remains one of the best buildings, but I mean, there was that, it was shiny and new. And
I will say, as far as roster goes, the 02-03 squad had a pretty good roster. I mean, you look at the guys on that roster, and granted, that's probably why they had such a big playoff run, because no one expected them to do that well in the playoffs. So I would say, as far as roster goes, that was probably one of the better ones that the Wild have seen. At least when you think back to some of the old school names, they were on that team. So that's probably what I would go with. But yeah, it's tough to choose because the Wild don't have any big momentous, like, Stanley Cup winning season or any superstars that came through.
I'm really excited what we toss out there for 2010.
In 10 years, when we go back and look at this, will be like, Kirill Kaprizov, remember him? That was fun.
That was fun years. So, well, that'll do it for this week's episode, episode 60. Shout out again to Jeff Baidu for joining us. Shout out to SodaStick, our presenting sponsor. Always some awesome swag. Be sure to go check them out. Toss down, bar down beauties. Shout out to Manscaped, a special hello and thank you to Kowalskis as well as Aquarius. And then shout out to all of you guys. Thank you for keeping this train rolling. We love you checking in with us. Certainly always offer your feedback. Give us a rating, 5 stars, 4 stars, 1 star. I haven't chirped any towns in a very long time, so
it's
I don't expect to see
a 1-star review.
I don't expect
you
to
just
see
might
that.
See it end up on a t-shirt if you do put it on.
Yeah,
there, so,
exactly. Exactly. So no, thank you guys for always checking us out and giving us some love. We really truly appreciate it. But help us grow. Subscribe, rate, share with your friends and family. That's what it's all about, baby. Let's keep that train rolling. So have a great rest of your week. We'll have more hockey to talk as the Minnesota Wild return to the ice. So that'll do it. Have a good one.
Hi, it's Anthony LaPanta, play-by-play man for the Minnesota Wild and co-host of the Worst Seats in the House podcast. When not focused on hockey, I love to spend my free time in the kitchen. Before we prepare a great meal, I always like to get my supplies at Kowalski's. They're the best in the Twin Cities when it comes to fresh meat. Personally, I love the Akiyushi steak line. It's as good as you can get in the Twin Cities. I also love their fresh fish selection, and the knowledge behind the counter is second to none. It's a great spot for your fresh produce. It's always worth the trip wherever you are to get yourself to Kowalski's. When it's time to have a great meal, you might as well start with the best products. I do my shopping at Kowalski's, and I recommend you do too. It's Kowalski's, the joy of good food.